Austin, I'm Richard Shook. I'm professor of drama at Queen's University, Belfast, though I'm an American by birth and first saw the Redoux Shakespeare Company all the way back in 1990, before you were part of it. But as a scholar, I'm a...
You're the Redoux Shakespeare Company veteran, not me.
That's right. You're the newbie.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Redoux Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Redoux Shakespeare Company podcast, number 490, Shakespeare and Burlesque. One of the highlights of performing at the Folger Theater at the Folger Shakespeare Library here in Washington, D.C. is the sort of easy collision of artists and scholars. Richard Shook is the professor of drama at Queen's College in Belfast, Northern Ireland, and was working here at the Folger during our first week here. He wrote a blog post recently about the history of Shakespearean parody, and apparently the Redoux Shakespeare Company is part of a noble historical tradition. Professor Shook was good enough to sit down and talk to me about his work and apparently our history.
I'm a scholar of the history of Shakespeare on the stage, and that includes the history of Shakespearean parody or burlesque. And in 2002, I published a book by Cambridge University Press called Not Shakespeare, Bardolatry and Burlesque in the 19th Century. And it's, so far to date, the only book that's on Shakespeare parody. And what I found fascinating was that, you know, the theaters were closed in 1642 by the Puritans, so still sort of broadly Shakespeare's generation. They were closed for 18 years. They reopened in 1660 at the Restoration. So that's the first generation after Shakespeare.
Right.
The parodies of Shakespeare began then, at the earliest possible opportunity. Yeah. So essentially, as long as there's been Shakespeare, there have been parodies of Shakespeare. So what I wanted to say in my blog post was that the Redoux Shakespeare Company, whether they like it or not, has a fantastic pedigree and part of a long history of what I think of as loving and indeed reverential spoofs or comic treatments of Shakespeare that don't make fun of Shakespeare, but quite often make fun of pomposities or snobbery around Shakespeare. They make fun of the attitudes that we bring to our own engagement with Shakespeare, all the while cherishing and understanding the plays themselves. I think what you do and what the great burlesque artists have always done is very, very smart and very clever and not just very entertaining.
It's so great to hear you say all of that, because it both kind of opens my mind a little bit and confirms some things I've felt, but I hope that I would never have the chutzpah or the arrogance to actually say, so I'm thrilled to have you say it. But last, I did a podcast with a doctoral candidate a couple of weeks ago who was also talking about this idea of reverence, and I hope we're as reverent to Shakespeare as he was to Holinshed, which is to say, not much. You know, he, as an artist, he took what was useful to him and then made it his own, made it his own into something, well, obviously, amazing in his case. In our case, maybe just entertaining. But can you talk about this idea of reverence?
Sure. Shakespeare was not, as you say, Shakespeare was not reverential toward his sources. He was instrumental, pragmatic, farsighted, canny. He was writing a play that he wanted people to enjoy. So he wasn't writing a history book. He was writing a play. So one of the deep ironies is that adaptation, or rather to adapt Shakespeare, is to be very Shakespearean.
Oh,
because cool. That's what Shakespeare himself did.
Yeah.
Indeed, Shakespeare wrote some of the first burlesques. If you look at The Rude Mechanicals in Midsummer Night's Dream, what is that? It's a satire upon theater.
Yeah.
And there are some echoes in the Pyramus and Thisbe scene in Midsummer Night's Dream where he kind of spoofs the balcony scene in Romeo and Juliet.
That's right. That's
so,
right.
So, and even in the Pageant of the Nine Worthies in Love's Labour's Lost, Shakespeare is making fun of his own medium.
Mm.
So this is the ironic link, the connection between what comic artists do today and what Shakespeare himself did. So there's absolutely no betrayal going on. You are very much following in Shakespeare's own footsteps, whether you like it or not.
As I like it. I do like it. Well, and even Hamlet talks about, Hamlet brings the playwright's knowledge of the theater into his character.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, two things are occurring to me. One is that I wish we had read your book when we were writing our show, The Complete History of Comedy Abridged, because I think it would have been an invaluable resource, and I'm going to go to Amazon right now and look for it. But you talk about some of these great 19th century Shakespeare parodists. Can you talk about them a little bit?
Yeah. The Victorian era was the great era for Shakespearean parody. It's golden age. And that was probably because that was the century in which more Shakespeare was performed for audiences than before or since. And there was a strange situation where, you know, you sort of get the equivalent of Benedict Cumberbatch or Jude Law doing Hamlet, and then a week later at a downtown fringe theater, some comedian is dressed up just like Jude Law or Benedict Cumberbatch and doing a total piss take, a total parody of the production. And the fascinating thing is that the audience would go see both.
Right.
Because the joke doesn't work unless you know the original. And it would often be down to mocking the intonations or gestures or quirks or habits of the leading Shakespearean of the day. And one of the great 19th century burlesque stars was a comedian named Frederick Robeson. And he was beloved by Queen Victoria. She was one of his biggest fans. Before Prince Albert died in 1861, she would go to the theater a lot. And his most famous Shakespeare burlesque role was as Shylock in a play called Shylock or The Merchant of Venice Preserved. And there are two jokes in there. It's not just a twist on The Merchant of Venice. As some of your podcast listeners will know, there's a play by Thomas Otway called Venice Preserved.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of a two-for-one joke for people
right.
who know their,
right,
their
right.
fine details
right.
of theater history. But what... So Frederick Robeson played Shylock for a Victorian audience as a Victorian Jew in East London. He knew that neighborhood. He adopted the accent. The persona of Shylock was not that he was a pawnbroker, but that he was a tailor. He was a merchant in the rag industry,
okay.
as they called it, which, of course, was heavily dominated by Jews in London at the time. So he brought all those kind of contemporary topical references into his portrayal. And what people loved about it is that even though he was hysterically funny, he somehow had a beeline right into the tragedy and poignancy of Shylock,
right.
particularly when his daughter leaves him. Remember, Shylock's wife, Leah, has died.
Right.
So he only has his daughter left, and then she leaves him, and then she takes his money as well.
Yeah.
So he has nothing. And Frederick Robeson sang this song in which he goes from tragedy to comedy to tragedy to comedy, and he's kept the audience on their feet. And that's the most amazing thing about the burlesque. And it's what the Reduced Shakespeare and Company does as well. They're not just sort of mindless spoofs. They're actually very funny, canny alterations between comedy and drama that make us see the plays afresh by continually surprising us. It's a real treat for the audience.
Oh boy, I'm putting that on a poster.
Hi, this is Cynthia Ryder, Executive Director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and this is the podcast for the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Where can you RSC the RSC? We have one more week performing the world premiere of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at the Folger Theater at the Folger Shakespeare Library. We close this Sunday, May 8th, then hit the road again, taking the complete history of Comedy Abridged to Saratoga, Rancho Cucamonga, and Poway, California, Gillette, Wyoming, Reston, Virginia, and Somerville, New Jersey. And then we'll take William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged not only to Boone, North Carolina in July, but to the Edinburgh
Edinburgh Fringe Festival for all of August. We'll be back at the Pleasance Courtyard, and we're hugely excited. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Professor Richard Shook, where, if you'll forgive me, I'm about to hold forth about comedy.
Comedy is about emotion. Comedy is about surprise.
Right.
Comedy is about tension and the release of tension, and sometimes that tension can be released in a tragedy with a gasp, and sometimes in a tragedy with a laugh, or in a comedy with a laugh. It's funny working on Long Lost Shakes is that Long Lost Shakes takes a couple of emotional turns that I think the audiences don't anticipate. But we are, the gag of Long Lost Shakes, the conceit, is that we are reducing Shakespeare's 100-hour-long masterpiece down to 2 hours. But all of his plays have rich emotional moments. So our challenge was to find those emotional moments that are both funny and real, and maybe not funny, but maybe more poignant.
I think that's the trick, and that's the heart of the burlesque. It's not just a satire upon Shakespeare, but in a way it's using comedy to shine a light on the complexities of the play. It's what Shakespeare himself did, and it's what the great parodists have been doing for the past several centuries.
Well, and getting back to the thing you were saying about you have to know the thing that's being satirized to appreciate it. The challenge in writing Long Lost Shakes is to focus on the characters in the canon that were not covered by the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged, but that are still familiar to an audience, so they know who they know who Richard III is, they know who Falstaff is, they know who Puck and Ariel are.
Exactly. And you've put your finger on it exactly, because up until now, we haven't talked too much about the audience, who are, of course, the missing link.
Right. They're the fourth member of the RSC.
Member of the RSC. And the burlesque, as you said, the burlesque only works if the audience is in on the joke. You know, if you're spoofing a minor character in Titus Andronicus, it's really not going to work.
Right.
Which explains why the history of parody really gravitates around a core canon of tragedy.
Right.
There's Hamlet, there's Macbeth, sometimes Othello, but it's really kind of Hamlet and Macbeth and Merchant of Venice.
Yeah.
These are plays that everybody knows, so the audience is familiar with them.
Right.
And they're serious enough so that there's something you can make fun of. It's hard to do a burlesque of Shakespeare in comedy because it's already funny. But my question back to you is, how are you gauging how much your audience knows about Shakespeare? And over the years, are you seeing any change, if you will, in the audience's Shakespearean literacy?
One of the great delights of performing the show is discovering how much Shakespeare is actually in the public knowledge and is in the general parlance. And because we've had people come out to the lobby after the workshop production saying, God, I knew a lot of this. Now, part of that is because Shakespeare's everywhere. Part of that is by design, in that we've tried to include every famous speech from every famous play. Like, if you only know Henry VI because somebody says, first thing we do, we kill all the lawyers, that line is in there.
And you may not know the title of the play, but you'll know the line.
You'll know the line, yes. And so people hear that and they go, wait, I know that. You know? And so it's doubly gratifying because we go, oh, good, they got the joke. And they get to go, gee, I'm pretty smart.
it's a win-win.
Yeah, it's absolutely win-win. It was said about the complete works, and I hope it's true about this show too, is that if you like Shakespeare, you'll like our show. If you hate Shakespeare, you'll love our show. Because
you can't lose.
We're sending it up at the same time. Yeah. It's great to hear you talk about the Victorian comedians because we don't know about them or much. Are there 20th century comedians, some of whom we do know, that were doing some of the same work that you're talking about?
I think in sort of the vaudeville and the variety circuit in the early parts of the 20th century, that's where this kind of abbreviated comic entertainment went to also an early television for an American audience. Thinking of people like Milton Berle, Sid Caesar, and Imogen Coco. We're going way back now of your show of shows.
But that's more recent than the Marx Brothers, which was I was afraid of.
Then sort of thinking of things like that, where basically every kind of leading comic performer eventually does a spoof of Shakespeare. I mean, even Saturday Night Live did a kind of, if I'm remembering this correctly, a sort of ghetto balcony scene from Romeo and Juliet. Yeah. It went down tremendously well, but it just shows that Shakespeare is always a kind of touchstone for whatever cultural issue seems important. Shakespeare's way of looking at that issue or handling it, and Shakespeare is always available for both reverence and irreverence.
And we're back to this idea of reverence. We always say all of our shows are celebrations of the topics, because we wouldn't spend years reducing a topic we didn't love and have affection for. And that is as true of the Bible as it is of Shakespeare. And so this is a hard concept to get across to folks.
It is, because we're in some ways still beholden to a kind of almost master-slave relationship with culture. There are master figures in texts like Shakespeare and the Bible, and then we can only be slaves or consumers of these masterpieces.
Yeah, we are not worthy.
We are not worthy of them. They are going to be always so much greater than we are, and we can simply receive the great pearls of wisdom that they can bestow upon us. But we are forbidden so often from having a relationship, or really, if you will, from being partners with these great cultural treasures. That's part of what the Reduced Shakespeare Company is trying to do, to use a fancy word, is to give actors and audiences agency, to make them co-creators of an event and not just consumers of it.
Wow, co-creators of an event. That's absolutely 100% right. Do you feel like that master-slave relationship is changing a little bit?
I do. I think it's part of a broader generational shift, and not to reduce everything to absolute topicalities, but the kind of mistrust of institutions that is explaining, weirdly, both the popularity of Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. Yeah. We can sort of extend that out generally, that people have lost or are losing confidence in what are supposedly the great leading institutions of the law, of culture, of government, of religion, and are trusting more and more their own sense of what they want to decide is right or appropriate or necessary at any given moment. And that goes for Shakespeare as much as it goes for presidential primaries.
Do you know much about the musical Hamilton?
A bit, yes. Yeah. It's gotten attention over in the UK.
Right. Hamilton feels to me part of a democratic moment, a moment of democratization, I guess, maybe, in where the popular culture, popular language, the story of America then is being told, as they say, by America now.
Yeah.
And it's great, first of all, to just have a Broadway musical that is so in love with language in the way that we are in love with Shakespeare's language. But it does feel like this is part of this moment that you're talking about theatrically.
No, I think that's right. There's a great sense of ownership, I think, both in terms, as you say, of artistic form and content, and also appealing to a younger, broader, more culturally and racially diverse audience. I think all these things are of a piece. Yeah. And, you know, even Shakespeare has been translated into Klingon. And, you know, the Klingonite Shakespeare fans are the most ardent of any. So my feeling is, however you need your Shakespeare served up for you, that's great.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your Shakespearean parody via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, misguided pixie Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week, it goes to Laura Dreyfus. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Cynthia Ryder, Executive Director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland, Oregon. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 1470th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Have a
Have I given you enough cheesy Shakespeare comments?
Yes. You have, and as many of my listeners know, I embrace the cheese.
Go for it.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less.